Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Not have rested until Triple H's bollocks were hanging above the roof.
Come on to the Rock Show. Come on to the People's Show. Come on to the Premier Show. SmackDown.
It is the 2nd of December, the year of our Lord, 1999. Wamdu Project. Not sure if I pronounced that right, but if you know who they are, you're old and probably deaf anyway. Have the number one hit in the UK charts with King of My Castle.
Must be the reason why I'm King of My Castle. Must be the reason why I'm making examples of you. Ah! What a tune! I fancied her a little bit. The lead singer of the Wham-Do Project.
That's right.
Used to put pause on my recordings of The Box. Smash Hits You Control.
God. Big fan of the Big Whammer Jammer. Anyway, if you weren't listening to that, you were in the UK cinemas seeing The World Is Not Enough, number one for the first week. It's half good, half bad. It's all right, though. There's a lot worse Bond. And if you weren't doing that, you were playing Unreal Tournament.
Wow! Unreal Tournament time!
I can't believe that's 20 years old. God. But that is all irrelevant to the most important SmackDown that has ever occurred. And maybe one of the most important things to hit human civilization since the discovery of penicillin. But it is our job here at the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown Review to get you hyped. So we are going to get you primed and just leave you revving the engine with the handbrake on, just making a mess. Well, myself, Matthew Gregg, and the lovely Tom Campbell give you some added context, but Tom's currently choking on a peanut cookie. So after that, he'll give you some context about what's about to happen.
I'll give you some added context. Welcome to the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown Review. If this is your first time here, welcome in. Myself and Matthew Gregg have given ourselves
It was easier for Hercules to do the 12 tasks than it was for you to say Hercules.
This is nice, because it's nice. Some people assume I never trip over my words, but I would over my trip quite a bit. The Herculean task of watching every episode of SmackDown from its very beginning until my inevitable death. One, whichever comes first. And we are coming to the end of 1999. The first few months of SmackDown have been a rip-roaring success.
Ooh.
And we are now going to watch quite a pivotal moment of SmackDown. Well, I say we're about to. We have watched and we're going to discuss a rather pivotal moment from the history of SmackDown. The SmackDown known as the SmackDown After the Wedding. Now, if you're a wrestling fan in 1999 and we say the wedding, chances are you know what wedding we're talking about. It's not a happy wedding.
It's the marriage between Austin and a passing car.
That's what I call a shotgun wedding. Before we get into the rigors of this particular episode of SmackDown and some of the horrible, horrible imagery and events that occur within it that don't age well at all, shall I give you a little bit of context as to what is happening in the wrestling world in 1999 in this week?
So you can shut your eyes and everything is 4x3 and neon.
So whilst you're listening to the Wham-Do Project, King of My Castle, Rey Mysterio Jr. Was undergoing knee surgery.
No. We need the news for 1999, Tom.
This is knee surgery after a torn ACL following... Oh. Is the ACL's in the knee, isn't it?
Yes.
The acute contracture ligament.
ACL, he used to wrestle for NXT before he went off on that.
That was him. Rey Mysterio Jr.'s injury occurred on the set of Ready to Rumble, the WCW movie starring David Arquette, that's due out next year. He blames the injury on not having proper time to warm up before being sent out to do a scene. He was doing a spot which called for a Frankensteiner off the top. He landed in a squat position and immediately heard his knee snap.
Ready to Rumble had such an impact on people's lives.
Oh, it really did. Oh, I can't wait till we talk more about Ready to Rumble next year. Next year in the timeline. That yes. is. It'll be this year to you and I.
Exactly.
Also from this year.
Also, actually, I'll interrupt. The ACL connects your thigh bone, femur, to your shin bone, tibia.
The thigh bones connected to the shin bone.
Not anymore, Ray. You can't sing that song in the waiting room.
Bret Hart in the Calgary Sun caused a bit of a rift in the family when he discussed Tom Billington's book, Pure Dynamite. Did you have a copy of Pure Dynamite?
No, couldn't buy it anywhere when it came out. So
I used to have a copy, but I think I threw it out. Not out of anger, but when I had a clear out, the book was so bent and frayed from multiple reads that I ended up chucking it.
Very appropriate for the Tom Billington book,
yeah.
I think, about it.
Yeah.
But what do you remember about it,
so
Tom?
Much. I remember it being quite an angry tome. I remember it being quite a bitter tome. I seem to remember him telling the story of, like, weirdly told in a proud... In a proud way about how a young man came to his door cautiously, humbly asking for steroids, to which he supplied him with horse steroids and sat with him as he gave him his first steroid injection. And he goes to say, that man's name was Chris Benoit. It's like, why are you telling this like a proud dad? Like watching him like score a home run on the softball team. Oh, I remember this young man. I gave him his first steroids. His name was Chris Benoit. Wonder what happened after that. So the whole book is just, it's littered with stuff like that. It talks a lot about how much Tom Billington and David Boy Smith dislike one another. I think it feels like it's more... It's 60-40 Billington, to be honest. But I remember there's a lot of stuff in there that's quite angry and quite aggressive. As Bret Hart noticed, he wrote in the Calgary Sun, where he had a column in the Calgary Sun, he said, one thing that didn't turn out the way I liked it was Dynamite Kid's book. As great as a wrestler as he was, I'm saddened to realise, in addition to injuring his elbows, knees, shoulders and back, he's broken his brain too. Bret Hart then talks through the factual errors in Tom Billington's book for an entire column, which I'm sure was a rip-roaring read, as it were. Tom Billington responded, saying, I won't deny there are things in the book that certain people, including Bret, might not like. The fact of the matter is, the truth sometimes hurts, and whether people like it or not, everything in that book is true. But in saying that about me, it's a shame that Bret doesn't also remember just how much effort I put into getting him over in the ring, in Stampede, in Japan, and in the WWWF. I do. I remember it every single day.
Ooh.
Well, so Bret was like, you've lied about stuff. And Tom Billington went, when I lost to you. it's a bit bitter and a bit silly.
I'd add on to that, I remember World of Wrestling gave an interview with Tom Billington, and which is quite rare. Still, obviously, a lot rarer now. But, And
because he's dead.
And that's right, dead sick of answering questions from fans. And he said, I believe it was Bret Hart gave his endorsement to the book until he didn't put him over like he was king of the world. So I think that was the words, the effect of what he said. So I think that was it. And it is weird because they did, High Spots went over to interview him. A few years ago, and they were like, we'll do a shooting of you with Dynamite Kid. No one's done this. Wow.
Okay.
Why has no one done this for this legendary wrestler? Because he's a knacker. So they had to like fill it with wrestlers going how great he was and how awesome. We just cut to this guy, just goes like, so what was your memories of I was good. And that's it for apparently 2 hours. But there's they ask about some of the crazy stories that you've heard about him that might be in the book. I don't remember if you know about, to sum up this nice comedic podcast we did about breaking someone's ankles for the insurance money.
There was something about that in the book.
Yeah, they asked him about it and goes, is that real? Because people thought that wasn't a real thing. And he went, yeah. So he's honest about the bad stuff he's done.
Yeah.
At least there's many faults about him. But he goes, no, I did that. I own up to it. I'm like, who have I got to lie to? Yeah, I did do these horrible things. So maybe Bret's like, yeah, one time I'll admit, me and Dynamite, we had a 2.5-star match in Japan. Anyway, what else is in the news?
The WWF theme restaurant at Times Square sadly has hit delays. WWF New York was scheduled to open around Christmas or New Year's. It's going to miss both. It's opening on the 19th of January, the day after my little brother's birthday.
Oh, how nice.
I'm sure they planned. I'm really sad, I don't know about you, that I never got to go to WWF New York at all during its lifetime. Yeah. I would have even taken going to The World as it got renamed, because they realised nobody wants to go to a WWF theme restaurant, so let's pare it down a touch.
Yeah, and it's good that they picked, you know, a small area to test this out. If that doesn't cut. New York!
Wasn't there one before this in Niagara Falls?
Don't remember.
Adjusting my foot.
I was going to say, wait a minute. I lift these heavy crates right next to the
set. I said that as I propped my leg up, so it looked as if I'd made an indecent proposal to Matthew. Wasn't there a Niagara Falls? It's a new chat up line. I'm sure there was, because Artie Reynolds from Wrestle Crap often drinks out of his WWF Niagara Falls cup. So I assumed there was a WWF in Niagara Falls before WWF New York.
There was a convention center, I believe. Oh, it was a retail store.
Oh, okay. So it was a shop. It wasn't a restaurant.
It was actually called WWE Niagara Falls.
When we get to next year, the grand opening, I think we should look at the menu of WWF New York.
Oh, I'd love that. The only thing I remember about WWF New York was, other than to go, hey, here in WWF New York on Sunday Night Heat, here's a wrestler who's not booked in the pay-per-view, to go, yeah, great.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than those little moments we'll get to, was the fact that they staged a few boxing matches the Howard Stern Show put on between, like, two very unlike people pretending to have a feud and all this. And one time, Triple H and Austin were there, like, watching. He's like, oh, so what do you guys think? Obviously, a lot of co-promotion there. And they're like, oh, man, I can't wait. Because they're both drunk. Like, kind of these idiots to start lumping your potatoes and give each other CTE for people's enjoyment. It's going to be so good. And they're like, we were through. So who have you got winning? They're like, oh, we don't care. Blind drunks.
We're just here for the bands, mainly. Yeah. Diamond Dallas Page was on the WCW tour in Canada when WCW and WWF crossed paths. Never happened that often, but every so often a tour would see the WCW guys and the WWF guys meet up. Now, I remember reading in Power Slam that it was on this tour that DDP saw Vince McMahon in an airport and ran up and gave him a hug and said, at last we finally meet. Oh. I seem to remember that being... It might not have been this time. It might have been another time. It might have been something that Greg Lambert made up. We don't know. But on this tour, according to Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer, DDP spoke with The Big Show and about some opportunities within WWF. Mm. DDP's contract had about 2.5 years left on it, and he was aware that with Eric Bischoff not a part of WCW at this point, that his wingman in the locker room had gone. So he was aware that he was probably not going to get a push anytime soon. So he was looking for pastures new. So was starting to get the feelers out there for DDP moving to WWF. Will that happen? We did not know. I'm going to get this one final thing from this particular year. A fitness model has been showing some skill and interest in the wrestling world. She's been part of live audio wrestling a few times, as it's based in Canada, where she's from.
Good God.
And was backstage at WCW Mayhem. Terry Taylor encouraged this fitness model to join WCW. At the same time, Scott Levy, a.k.a. Raven, had approached her about coming to ECW. However, this particular week in the year of our Lord, 1999, she signed a 3-year developmental deal with the idea that she would become an in-ring wrestler and wouldn't be involved in any nudity-based storylines. Her name was Patricia Ann Strategius.
Never heard of it, Tom.
This was Trish Stratus signing on the dotted line for the WWF.
Trish Stratus? That's not a real name.
Trish signing on the dotted line for the WWF in this particular year. Nice. I didn't realise she'd been courted by WCW and ECW. She obviously had something about her. Yeah. There's something about Trish if everybody wants to. Obviously, she's a beautiful woman. But beyond that, she's obviously shown some interest, some acumen, some skill. Mm. Enough for them to go, come on down.
So it's weird. Someone did a podcast in 99 and they were, hey, do you want to work for us, the big leagues? Isn't that what we're all imagining in our heads?
Mm.
It's between Trish Stratus and Ryan Sutton. Get in. But never mind that.
Ryan Sutton's got cracking breasts.
But never mind that.
Okay. Never mind that, Matt.
Because we need to get on the way. We need to start the feature attraction. All the trailers have been out the way. All the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Monday Night Raw recap.
Oh, man.
And let's see if we can get this going. I never felt like this before. I'll put the proper enunciation. Our love will last forever. Together. Just you and me forever. It's a wedding of Test and Steph. Test and Steph are getting married, finally.
Is it the Savage Elizabeth music? I nearly said the Hogan Savage music. Together, our love will last forever, brother.
Our cocaine will run forever. They're running out slow-mo. The soppy cam was all the Vaseline on the lens. It's happening. David Boy Smith has been tied to something backstage. All the bins have been removed. There are no bins within a 3-mile radius. There's just rubbish everywhere outside, but it's worth it.
David
for this.
Smith's been tied up outside playing with a title shot.
He's stuck in a tree like Father Jack come out of the plane. But it's okay. Everything's all right. Nothing can go wrong.
Nope, it's
and
all
now
fine.
We get to the line. If you've ever seen any soap or TV or film, if anyone has just cause against this marriage, please speak now. My time! Wait, what's Triple H doing there? He reveals, with the power of the video guy backstage, that they went to Vegas. And I remember you saying last week that apparently it was Linda McMahon who went, why don't you go to Vegas?
Linda McMahon paid for her to go to Vegas on her Hindu bachelorette party for you Americans, which leads me to believe that Linda McMahon was in on it all along. Linda McMahon, who raised the briefcase in King of the Ring 99, and Linda McMahon, who married... Linda McMahon is influential in changing the shape of this business, and we don't even know it.
She's getting very Metal Gear solid-y now with, like, this mysterious person behind all the scenes. She is zero.
Do you wonder why she was so emotionless when all this was going on?
The nanomachines are running up. She's like, Linda... Go drive the Hummer. Anyway, quadruple agent Linda McMahon made Steph go to Vegas, where something happened. We'll get into that later on. She ended up pretty out of it. Probably some terms for that I can't say the podcast. Pretty out of it. She whitey'd, maybe possibly. And then Triple H picked her up in his pink Cadillac, drove her into a car. Can't do that. Through the 24-hour Whitechapel, only $40 to get married. Just saying, but, you know, I was there.
You were?
When Sam and Ross tied the knot.
Was it the same?
They're all the same there.
No, I'd love it if Ross and Sam got married at the same wedding as...
Oh, I didn't think about...
The same chapel that we're about to talk about.
You know what? Don't watch the episode of SmackDown. Take a word for it. Yeah, it was the same.
All right.
Only $40, marrying KO Steph. Triple H goes, yeah, it's me, Triple H from TV. Oh, you're so famous. You're better than Jericho. And then he makes Steph go like, yeah, I do. But blocks the field of vision.
The worst ventriloquism match you've ever seen.
It's pretty funny. So they're married, which means if they're married, Test and Steph cannot get married. They could do polyamory, but that's a conversation for a different day. But it would be polygamy if they did it today, so it's off. Wow, that's really getting to him. And then Triple H says, it's not did we, Vince, it was how many times did we consummate the marriage? Rape! I mean, all right, yeah. Cool, that's a bit that would... Hang on, there would be a saving throw for that later on. So
yeah,
it's all
but
right.
it's a hell of a long throw. And it lets you think for a long time that a throw isn't coming.
Luckily, Test is able to run him out of the recap package. And we cut the live footage of Shane McMahon trying to get a big hammer from Vince, who's having none of it.
On the subject of this wedding that we've just been recapped, so the wedding took place on Monday Night Raw, preceding this episode of SmackDown. I think you did it at the beginning. The wedding drew 7.26 million viewers. So that's more than the Lana Bobby one, just putting that out.
Do we need any more proof that Test was not a draw?
It gets better. Inside Edition did a feature on this wedding.
Inside Edition?
Inside Edition thought this was real. Inside Edition thought a woman had been roofied and married on wrestling television and talked about how appalled they were by it. They thought this was real. I'm amazed.
Yeah, that's Inside Edition don't cover like fakey wrestling. They cover real stuff. So
they thought it was real.
They thought it was real.
They thought it was real. Inside Edition. With this breaking shock story of a man who roofies and marries another woman. Where were they when Boss Man was dragging Big Show's dad through the graveyard? Where were they?
Not very insider. Just saying.
More like Outside Edition, am I right?
Just say, this seems a very last-minute save to help Armageddon along. The pay-per-view only diehards would care about this point.
It is a hell of a move to try and save a B pay-per-view. Yeah,
but end up being one of the best things to happen to WF and Triple H. It's momentum the next few months. But probably starting the show, Stephanie McMahon starts the show, and if you thought that last bit was good, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Oh, my God.
If there's ever a segment that sums up some of the crowds that would show up to see SmackDown, this is it.
I'm embarrassed to be a wrestling fan after seeing this.
Okay, Stephanie McMahon comes out.
Embarrassed.
And she walks the ring, and she's got this, oh, God, my life has been ruined. I can't marry the man I love. And the crowd boos Steph. And to the point where, obviously, the commentary's done in post, Cole and Lawler have to start off, and even Lawler, so I'm going to go, what are these fans doing? She was roofied. She was forced to do this. She's the... And... She's booed like Mike Ashley at the home games.
It's worse. It's actually worse than that. This crowd, not only do they boo her, they chant slut. What? What is... Right. In 1999, when I watched this first time round, even then, at the tender age of 15, I knew the wrestling fans in the Arrowhead Pond that night were a bunch of f***ing troglodytes. I am gobsmacked.
Go off on one, Tom.
Gobsmacked that you think it's acceptable. Like, what? And I don't necessarily blame the mouth breathers in the crowd, essentially, right? I blame, to an extent, the WWF, because they have fostered this, and it's partly through Russo booking, among other things, they have fostered this premise, and it's wrong. And but that's why the crowd react in this way, because they're led to believe this sort of thing happens on the regular, and it's okay to chant this sort of thing, even if you're really against the storyline. Like, that's a real horrible thing to chant. I know you'll be listening to this and going, yeah, but we all know where this goes. We do. The power of hindsight, we know where this goes. But in this moment, and we try and talk about these episodes of SmackDown, in the moment they live in, this is a woman who was roofied, kidnapped, forced to marry, and we're booing her and calling her a slut. This is so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable.
Oh, but I mean, Tom, in fairness, though, it was a different time. 1999.
It was 20 years ago. This wasn't like...
Things were different back then.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, Hebner tells Shane and Vince that Stephanie needs her in a bit that was very blatantly pre-taped and shoved into this bit with no attempt to disguise the fact. But it's probably to, again, extract from the slut chants that are happening. The audio is all over the place here. It's very muted. Again, I think they're doing their best, which means that as loud as you can hear them on the network, they were even louder on TV. Well, not TV. Well, it was actually happening. It's all pre-taped. Anyway, poor Steph speaks in exposition, sign of things to come, and knows now that the bartender was working for Triple H and drugged her. Again, I'm just saying that that bartender looked like a one. We used different names. Minder Leclan, but just saying. And the only time the crowd pop or give any responses when she goes, Steph says, Triple H, you used me as a tool. And the crowd goes, yeah, he did. Oh, woo, Christ. Pop. Woof.
Embarrassed.
Crowd is so muted, you can't even hear it. Roman sucks. but Steph speaks to Shane and Vince and says, look, I want to deal with this her way, my way, so she can keep some integrity rather than having a dad and brother deal with it. And Vince and Shane promise. And this is it's a nice way of ending a serious issue with women being forced upon, and it's dealt with very sensitively to end the segment. Cut to Viscera spraying himself with cologne saying, Tori's going to have a night that she's never going to forget.
Basically, in the first hour of this episode of SmackDown, we play sexual harassment hot potato, in which it goes from Steph, who... And to quickly knit back to the Steph thing, the thing that made me the most uncomfortable.
Oh, go on.
The chants, the boos, and the I want to deal with it myself is a magnanimous way of doing it. She was apologising. She was saying sorry. And it's so uncomfortable. And again, as you say, let's cut to Viscera.
By the way, he's talking about it. Mind you, he's putting on his, you know, odour sexual assault.
Was he using Adidas here? Because
I didn't even pay attention to that.
This is the depth in which I sometimes find myself watching SmackDown for these podcasts. I had the bit paused where Viscera's got his quite sad little collection of sprays and basically the same brush that we have for our cat that he was using just to put through his mohawk. And the little. Please tell me if you can identify what the cologne is, because I think it's Adidas, like the or Adidas,
or Poor Hom.
It looked like the Adidas triangle on it. I couldn't quite make it out. I was just intrigued to know what it was.
Breaking news, Adidas has pulled out the sponsorship with WWE. Something about not being happy about associated with sexual assault.
Was it Oda Lugs?
Oh, speaking of which, before you get into your thing, because this just keeps on going and going, as you'll see.
Oh, yeah.
This segues into, Kane attacks Viscera backstage, and then it's like, as something's happening, segues into Lugs, the violence against women of the week. X-Pac, not even trying to hide the fact that he deliberately kicks Tori, as opposed to maybe accidentally at Survivor Series, deliberately kicking Tori. The commentator's going, no, he saw that was Tori that time. He just kicked her. Lugs, decide and conquer, .. Women.
Christ.
And then Viscera and Kane brawl into the ring, and they get their match that they have when it's only limited to 2 minutes, where they say nothing but big man moves and big man bumping. Crowd loves it, and so did I back then, not going to lie. Rather than having
The first bit of wrestling that we're getting on what has been a very uncomfortable 20 minutes, 25 minutes maybe, of SmackDown so far. Just two big boys, Viscera and Kane. I can't help but think whilst this is on, I bet Viscera smells really nice.
That's a good point, actually.
I feel like he was the sort of, God rest his soul, he was the sort of big lad that would, I think I was this lad for a while when I was much bigger. They would always look like $1,000, and you're like, I want a tenth of the cool they've got, because they would come along and they were a bigger set, but they were dressed perfectly and they smelt amazing. And I feel like Viscera is one of those bigger lads that smells amazing. I want a smoky musky smell to him that I like myself, like the stuff that makes you smell a bit like a sexy campfire, like stuff like that. I can't help but feel like he smells really nice. Yeah. Even on the road, I imagine to ride with Viscera would be quite a pleasant experience, because he's probably quite a sweet guy in real life, and he probably smells great. Yeah.
And you think that he did that because people saw him wearing a bin bag and went, woof. He went, no, I'm going to make even more of an effort now.
Yeah, double down.
Viscera smells like rose petals backstage. He's like, wow, Viscera's really putting on the effort.
If you ever work with Nelson Fraser, could you just...
Could you tell us how he smelled?
Corroborate us and tell us what he smelled like.
I can message Meanie, he might know.
Oh, get Brian on.
I'll do it.
One day we will get Brian on. Get Brian on it.
Wakes up from one of the professional jobs he's doing. He says, Matthew from Botchmania asking, what did Viscera smell like?
Matthew's friends with Brian. Aren't you? So, like, every week, something will come up on this, or something will come up in my life, and I'll message you and go, can you ask Brian what he thinks of this?
And
he
it's always
the meaning.
It's never like stuff he did or matches he had. It's always like, you were there backstage doing nothing.
our friendship has brought me many things, but it's also brought me closer to the Blue Meanie. And like, you're now a conduit. I think me and Blue Meanie would be best friends. Yeah.
I am Viscera, and Blue Mini is my odor color. Anyway, Kane gets distracted by X-Pac getting on the mic and entering Trump and goading Kane to chasing him outside by bragging about how he deliberately attacked Tori, which would have had a lot more impact if the commentators hadn't just established that on the Lugs. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Kane loses via count out. But he goes back in and chokeslams Viscera anyway because he's a sex pest and then scares X-Pac with his pyro. The good news is there's no more subtle ancient racism from Lawler. And, and wonderful. I must explain myself very well last week because I got a bit worried because I have had no tweets about it. Watch your check now. There'll be loads of going, you damn racist idiot, Matthew. You soy boy racist. But the bad news is Viscera still loves assaulting women. So, as you've just said, in the first 15 minutes of the show, you almost picture WF going, PTC's no big deal, but will this make it a bit harder for them to target the specific problems with the, what we'll call, problematic characters we have here on SmackDown? And having three violence against women's back-to-back, to quote Scrubs, a good lawyer couldn't help them here. Jesus.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Let's double down on the lugs, shall we? Because they're happy to spend money. I presume they don't have televisions.
Yeah. I wonder how long lugs last, because I'll miss it when it's gone.
Well, we get extra lugs
this
week.
Right. Oh, just you wait. If you're a big fan of
lugs. I bloody love it.
But do you think it should have gone the other way? Yeah, so they open up WWF New York, like, hello, can I take your order? Welcome to WWF New York. And they go, yeah, can I get the roofie wedding sandwich? Smelly Vista go.
The lovely smelly Vista, and it smells like elderflower.
Backstage, Al Snow is watching his match with The Rock on Raw. And it's a clip of The Rock hitting the people's elbow on him. And Mick Foley shows up and is completely oblivious to how annoyed Al Snow is at watching it on repeat and going, yeah, look at Rock go. Look at how good he looks.
But then Al Snow's getting angry about it. And then Mankind, with a mouthful of food, is going, see, it looks like a misunderstanding. As The Rock taunts over Al Snow, bounces across both ropes, and very clearly drops an elbow on him. Mankind going, it was a misunderstanding. I love him so much at this point. Yeah. He's so brilliant.
And Al insists he did it to him deliberately when he said Al Snow, because we haven't got any context here, he said Al Snow came to the ring to help Mick fight off some guys. And then The Rock hit the people's elbow on Al. It's very hard to argue with this point.
The Rock is a full-on arsehole. But then that's not different.
And after the break, Mick Foley's trying to find The Rock, but helps us up with some free candy. And that's the segment.
Great segment.
Literally, just one of these little jars full of candy. She was a dirty sock hand in. Anyway, Edge and Christian versus the Dudley Boys.
Do you know where Edge was at time of broadcast?
I don't know.
Edge was in Romania when
doing
this was going live.
Highlander 3.
Endgame.
Was that 4?
Might have been 3. I don't know. Definitely wasn't the source.
The source? Which one was that?
Oh, that was the last one. It was the worst one.
Was that not 4?
Spoonie did an amazing review of Highlander.
Spoonie,
the source.
By Christ.
Who wants to live forever? Highlander Endgame was being filmed in this particular week. Adam Copeland was filming his scenes. Mm-hmm. So he was off the house show run from the 1st to the 8th of December.
Beg your pardon, it was Highlander 4.
It was Highlander 4.
Highlander 3 was in 94. I haven't seen it yet.
According to Rotten Tomatoes, 11% of critics gave the film a positive review based on 54 reviews with an average rating of 3.2 out of 10. The site's critics' consensus reads, the fourth and supposedly last Highlander movie is a confusing mess complete with bad acting and dialogue. Yay, Edge! You think you know me.
I love that. I'm going to end it. But I've only seen Highlander 1. I think a lot of people have seen and liked. I think it's a great idea. Maybe some of it's not aged very well, but I think it makes up for its charm and idea and everything else like that. And just nice performances by Lambert and Connery. Mm. Have you seen Highlander 2?
I have not, no.
Good God almighty. What a mess.
Oh.
What a disgusting mess.
Are the Highlander films not like notoriously all a bit, with the exception of the first one, all a bit crap?
2, I think, is the reason for that.
Oh, really?
Because, I mean, you got to watch it. And also, the DVD comes with one of these great making-ofs with a guy. And it's always great when it's like a bad film. Because no one sets out to make a bad film. So, like, we had this idea and we did this. And they go, oh, no. And then it all went wrong. You know, just all went wrong. The train went off the tracks. Then it hit a nursery and then... Whatever. But then, yeah, so that's worth a watch if you like bad films. Because it's disgustingly bad. Tremendously bad.
Oh.
Okay, the funny thing being, I'll stop talking about Highlanders, but.
No, never.
I'm
never
sure there's,
I'm
sure there's some crossover. Because,
Of course,
Highlander 1 has a very famous scene that was shot in. Supposed to be Madison Square Garden, but it couldn't have been because some of the wrestlers weren't working for a company that could have worked for Madison Square Garden. So the Freebirds at that point, all this. But anyway, the Highlander 2 works at the level of, it completely changes all the story, that instead of them being immortals, they're all actually aliens that have landed. Because they went, we'll make Highlander 2. Okay, cool. We'll get Lambert and Connery. And you go, Connery died in the first one, quite dramatically. It's all right, it's a sci-fi film, just make something up.
Oh.
So he just comes back and it's like, what are you doing here?
Jesus.
And the reason is, well, you know, I'm a draw. It's like, all right.
I'm a draw.
Speaking of draws, Edgy Christian versus the Dudley Boys. Clips from Raw. It's a little embryonic bit. We like saying that on the show. The Dudley Boys trying to beat the Acolytes at a card game backstage, and Bubba tries to win with six aces. It's like all big brawl ensues. Sign of things to come, but they're still the Acolytes. Now still have those crappy t-shirts about Hell's Henchmen and all that. And also, yeah, the Dudleys were pretty on again and off again with the Acolytes. They didn't have a proper feud at this
they
point.
They kept just sort of bumping into each other. They were just two big beefy tag teams that always found each other again.
Yeah. Like Connery and Highlander.
Yes, exactly like Connery and Highlander.
And this is the first match on SmackDown for these two teams. They got a long, long feud out of this. They had their first match on Raw this week. All big bumping and forward rolling from Bubba. God, I forgot what a machine he was in his heyday. Considering his size and everything, he's just a giant stunt pad. Running around, taking every move. It's a lovely forward roll at one point for no reason other than to slap Christian on the apron. It was a very nice moment. Devon nails the diving headbutt. No was up. Lawler gets a good line. I don't know what's wrong with Bubba, but I bet it's hard to pronounce.
He had a couple of good lines this week, did Lawler?
Yeah. Christian playing road dog. Means he gets beat up. Until he manages to reverse DT off the top. Crowd goes wild for Edge.
Highlander.
But I know the crowd's the sound's a bit off this week, probably because that's the first segment. So maybe they were, maybe
probably
they weren't.
Probably because the crowd are a bunch of mouth breathers this week.
Yeah, mouth breathers love Edge. And if you don't believe me, ask Viscera's Skanky Ho.
Emporium.
Emporium now, is that what we're going with? I was going to go factory. Pumping them out.
John, Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, that movie. Can you redo the cover with Viscera on the front? Viscera's Emporium.
I love one week just tweets back, no.
I'm pretty sure that John Ilu, who is a friend of the podcast, who every so often will pop up in voice, but more often than not on PaintShop Pro, and will create images based on some of the weird mental dalliances that either myself and Matthew have or myself and Justin Henry have on the Cultaholic Classic Raw review. He basically deserves a knighthood. I'm sure there was one week where we asked him to do something and he just said no. I'm sure he's turned it down once and he is more than right to do it. I'm sure it was something appalling.
Good.
But yeah, Viscera and the Mr. McGorum's Wonder Emporium.
Push him to see how far he can go. Oh, that's the limit. That's where he's in there. All right, good. Anyway, Edge uses the momentum of the crowd to land the Frankenstein off the top rope on Bubba, but in the process hurts his leg doing it. And the pain causes Devon to pin him with a small package quite quickly afterwards.
What a strange finish.
It's the third episode in a row with Edge losing, but with an asterisk, getting the test push. I don't know what's up with this weird thing he's going through. He's putting over too cool, but with kind of screwy finishes, but not. And now he's doing the same thing for the Dudleys. I don't get it, but
are there some weird story where, like, Edge is clumsy? I don't get it.
I don't think it's leading anything, but we'll see next week. So we've got four in a row, eh?
Yeah, let's see how we do.
The Acolytes chase the Dudley Boys away. A feud that'll never end.
The never-ending storyline.
No, no, no. Speaking of films that had unnecessary sequels, Christ. Stephanie waiting for test. Backstage, he was presumably been driving his car in the night, like the No Easy Way Out scene in Rocky IV.
Test is going to play a blinder tonight.
Oh, just you wait.
Absolute blinder to the point where I almost say I want to retroactively delete all the support for him.
Backstage, Edge has, and I quote, jimmied his leg.
BB is having a good old feel.
God. Does it hurt if I touch here?
One
no.
Can
what
dream.
About no?
I want that to be BB's voice. Does it hurt when I do this?
I was fine until you showed up, BB. And whatever, we're not really bothered about Edge and his leg. What woman has he assaulted this week, Tom? That's what's the important thing in this show.
That's all that matters.
And then, in a stunning moment, also in this groundbreaking episode of SmackDown, D'Lo Brown shows up with the new Kiss of Death. No longer will Scrubs or No Push be wearing the WWF Attitude shirt. Oh, no. That's very 1998. Oh, no. D'Lo Brown is wearing the Lugs shirt of death. The sign now that there is nothing going on with you in your career, the Lugs shirt. A shirt to sell and advertise boots.
Isn't it terrible? He even incorporates it when he gets on the mic.
Oh, God. And yes, D'Lo Brown reminds everyone he has held the European title 4 times, which makes him the best. The counter-argument there is you've lost it 4 times as well, matey. Mm-hmm. So bring your jacked-up butt the ring, British Bulldog. And I quote, so I can shove my size 10 Lugs boot up it.
Available now from all good stores.
Sadder than seeing De Niro shill bread.
This wasn't even the most controversial fight that D'Lo Brown had this week.
Oh? Oh, this is actually news to me. What's on?
Did I tell you the story of D'Lo Brown versus Mike Graham?
Mike Graham?
From off of Never Drew a Dime.
Yeah, yeah, Mike Graham. What, 99?
So, remember
what was he doing there?
Remember I told you earlier on that this in the last 7 days, WCW and WWF have crossed paths in Canada.
Oh, okay, right.
So, Mike Graham was working for WCW at this point.
Yeah, of course.
He was just chatting back and forth with D'Lo and a few of the other lads, a few jokes bouncing back and forth. Yeah. D'Lo Brown sees Mike Graham chatting away, and Mike Graham's talking about what he's doing in WCW. And D'Lo says, you old guys would do anything for a paycheck. Like, in joke form, like, bit of banter.
Oh, okay.
Mike Graham misread the room. Graham didn't take it as a joke. And Graham said, to quote from the Wrestling Observer, Graham came back with a line to the effect...
Oh, no. Of, I just realised what's happened recently.
...of having wrestled for 25 years and never crippled anyone.
Oh.
Of course, a sensitive topic because of the incident with Darren Drozdov. Arn Anderson pulled Mike Graham away and had a chat with him. Mike Graham came back and the two shook hands and from that point acted like nothing had happened.
I had never heard of that. It's insane.
Graham's a silly boy. The entire situation was said to have taken 5 minutes, according to the Wrestling Observer. Dave Meltzer adds, Scott Hall's involvement in said situation was said to be limited to being there and staggering around looking for people to go to a local strip club with him. There is also talk... Not about the strip club. At this point, there is also, in the same way that DDP is testing the waters with WWF, D'Lo Brown is testing the water with WCW. And there has been some discussion about D'Lo, who's coming up to the end of his contract in 2 months' time, going over to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Jim Ross, who is in charge of signing wrestlers for the WWF, has said that actually... D'Lo Brown's contract has 18 months on it, lads, not two. However, WCW sources then claimed, no, D'Lo Brown's coming out of his contract in January and he's coming to us. So, like, the most casual bidding war is starting for D'Lo Brown. With WCW saying, wow, he's coming over here. And Jim Ross going, no, he's not. He's signed for a bit longer. And them going, no, he's not. He's coming over here.
Who's going to blink first?
Exactly, yeah. D'Lo Brown, possibly in Atlanta soon. We will see how this pans out.
Is that why they put the lug shirt on him? Oh, we'll make sure you're not worth a penny.
Do you reckon
when we're done with you?
They're reviving him.
Well said, yeah. That's fascinating to think of if that had happened. If we traded D'Lo for DDP, some sort of NFL draft style.
I was thinking
NFL draft.
I was thinking a hostage situation, like Dying of the Day. Like they got bond. they got bond out of that prison in exchange for a criminal.
Oh, good. We can stop giving D'Lo Brown scorpion torture on a daily basis. And these scorpions just stab him and go, lugs.
But D'Lo's promo here was really quite passionate. Puts over the fact that, like, he cares about the European title.
I was the only one who cared about that European title. Yeah?
Yeah, it's true.
Good argument to make, actually.
Because last week, Bulldog, after getting into a bit of trouble, left without it.
Oh, nice.
Lest we forget. Like, I'm glad they tie that in probably a completely accidental fashion.
Yeah. I'm struggling to think, though. Like, D'Lo Brown going to WCW at that point, maybe he could have... Stop eating biscuits. Maybe that could have been... The only criticism we get of the show is, can you please stop eating towards the mic? I'm trying to think of Bulldog. God, oh my, look what you've done to me. Who's that? Who is the mystery
Who's
man
that?
At Sin?
It's Pikachu! It's Clefairy!
Clefairy!
It's Paul Bearer.
Anyway, the point is, D'Lo Brown going to WCW at this point, that would have been interesting because I can see if the WCW may have done... Wait, no, what was WCW like back then?
Here's the thing, right? I think he'd have done all right because he's an ex-WWF guy, so there's stock. Vince Russo's over there at the moment.
And he was a Russo guy.
And he was a Russo guy.
No, wait, at this...
I reckon had he gone over, I think Spring Stampede would have been main event, Jeff Jarrett versus D'Lo Brown for the world title.
But that's the thing. If Russo stays, maybe, but then he's out and Sullivan takes over. I don't think Sullivan gave two squirts of piss about D'Lo, so sorry for saying that. But it's me listening to Cornet. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because that may have been... Anyway, we're going on a rabbit hole. Let's go back to the show where we make fun of Bulldog. So Bulldog has the Mean Street Posse with him again. Thank Christ.
I was worried.
Yeah, after they played the roles of getting Rikishi over last week, and I don't think he could have double duty on SmackDown with the Mean Street Posse. I mean, Tom, we're just human beings. Right. D'Lo Brown gets a chunky slam. I've like these lovely cookies that we're pretending not to eat. As Bulldog avoids landing on his back, and then, that wasn't bad enough, D'Lo Brown tries the running power bomb. Bulldog realized that might be the thing that ends me and sends me to the Nether Realm, and bumps so loosely on this to send D'Lo Brown over Bulldog and landing on Bulldog's coccyx. Venus interferes, to much rejoicing, and a very tepid brawl breaks out where no one's quite sure what's happening, but it's not a match, so it's all right.
I have to ask about this running powerbomb that became a Bulldog Hurricane Rana. The laziest, bulkiest Hurricane Rana I've ever seen. Was this an audible? Was this Bulldog who had agreed to the running powerbomb and then in the throes of the match realised what a running powerbomb was and went, oh no, I'm effed.
Mike Graham appeared in the clouds like Mufasa.
Go to Dagobah.
Bulldog, my son!
It's etched in stone! Just like the remains of your spinal column!
When the third visit, when the night, the clock strikes three!
The third visit from the posse! because it looked for all intents and purposes, like Bulldog had decided mid-move, nah, mate, you're all right. And they kind of rolled with this counter. Thank you. They rolled with this counter that looked like Bulldog did nothing other than just not go up for the move. D'Lo spun in midair like he'd taken a Hurricane Rana, and the comms were dead quick on it to go, oh, what a counter by Bulldog. Which leads me to think that that's what they were going for. But then it looks so crap, I'm not sure. And Bulldog has just got a reputation now for being so stoic in the ring. Like, the idea of him taking a back bump like a running powerbomb. You know, the move that probably Bulldog realised, hang on, this ended draws, with the greatest of respect to draws. Bulldog, with a back that basically resembles that time when you stacked a load of beer mats together to form a little house. Didn't really fancy taking the move.
Yeah, his spine is one running powerbomb away from being a stuck slinky. Yeah, I believe that I've seen stop motion wrestling figures on YouTube that had more animation than this move. And again, Bulldog wasn't hitting Frankensteiners in like 93 or 88. So I was like, yeah, you know what, 99, I could keep up with these burns.
This is the year I bust out my stonewashed Gene Frankenstein.
The stonewashed jeans in the...
I wonder whether D'Lo said... Maybe backstage they were planning. And D'Lo went, okay, so I'm going to hit you with a running powerbomb. And Bulldog went, no, don't. Okay, what should I do instead? Hurricane Rana? Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, great, we'll do that.
Yeah, if you can't give me a counter, I'm going to give you a shoot running powerbomb. Anyway, that segment very mercifully ends. Again, it's not as much.
We are. They don't announce it, but this does go towards. We're getting Val Venus and Bulldog at Armageddon anyway.
Yeah, three way.
Do we now add? Now we add D'Lo to the match, and we make it.
Well, we've got
another episode
after this, then Armageddon. So
right. Okay. So we get to make that. Okay.
So that's right. Don't worry. We're getting more Bulldog and D'Lo.
Oh, thank God.
Well, what Venus's line should have been after D'Lo says, "I brought respect to that title." Venus is like,
I've got nothing else going on.
Where were the posse when Val Venus ran out?
Triple H shows up.
The end. Mr. McClure.
Mr. McClure, yeah.
Where were the posse when Val Venus ran out? The end.
Stephanie is backstage waiting for someone to show up. Hopefully it's Test. But sadly, the worst thing that could have happened happens.
It is Test.
Triple H shows up in a limo. Triple H shows up in a limo. Are you ready? Gets the pop of the night from the crowd. And because it's the good DX of X-Pac and New Age Outlaws. And they bring trolleys full of presents. Oh, isn't this nice? X-Pac yells a lot and is like, yeah, Kane sucks, woo. He's really on something on this episode, I'll tell you. Billy Gunn is a lot calmer, explaining that the Rock and Sock connection have the tag title shot at Armageddon because they're number one contendership, that's how you say it, defeating the Hollies the last time we're doing this show. So, oh, okay. There's absolutely no hype for this, so thank you, Billy Gunn, for explaining this. New Age Outlaws start doing their intro, but stop, they're bad good guys. So they just stop halfway to screw the fans. The fans don't care. The fans still love the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac. And they introduce the new member of DX, Vince McMahon. Oh, no, it's just Triple H with Vince McMahon mask. Those wascally wabbits. It's weird how they go from being, yeah, we're going to kidnap your daughter and make her marry me, to like, wah, wah, I will your face. And it's an interesting segment we get here because, again, DX are supposed to be bad guys here, and the crowd are just like, whatever, nah, we're gonna cheer for you. So it's time for the wacky wedding present segment, where they'll get a prop, and Triple H cuts a line that no one will laugh at. Picture frame with Triple H's face.
That's quite funny.
Shoved in front of a source, that gets a pop, and then Triple H ruins it by going, I didn't think anyone had a bigger head than Vince. No one laughs, so then he goes, oh, Jericho, and then everybody laughs.
Oh, Christ.
He gets two toasters. Rich, I can never heat up that many buns at once. And then he gets an iron. And Triple H's line is, an iron? And then he gets some...
I mean, look, they can't all be singers.
Look, yeah. And I'm quoting here, ladies and gentlemen.
In his defense, they can't all be singers.
Billy Gunn gives him some lingerie. And they get up. And then Billy Gunn even gets to like, well, I thought it'd look good on you. And Triple H, well, I might fit into it. And Gunn's like, I just did the joke. Just whatever.
Yeah, but then X-Pac comes out with a similar.
Oh God, here we go.
Similar whammy.
I'm upset because I got you the same. He opens it up, and it's an empty box. Exactly. I believe it's like this is what your wife will be wearing on the wedding
wear
night.
Wear the box on your head.
No, man, because kids love when you get the box that the present comes in rather than the... Two words for you! Yeah. My God.
Oh, are they great banter, DX?
They are when they're awake. Oh, right, sorry, you're being sarcastic.
Yes.
Yeah, Triple H's lines aren't... He's always had that really, really broad stroke of comedy.
Broad stroke.
Where he has to be like... Get it? Like, yeah. Like, a fat guy walks to the room, Triple H is like, whoa, that dude's really fat. Whereas, you know, Road Dogg would be like, whoa, he's so fat, he'd have to make two trips just to haul ass or something like that.
That's a confidence thing.
I think that's it,
not
yeah.
having the faith in your joke, so therefore by making it an anti-joke, it protects you.
Like Norm Macdonald.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
That's it. By acknowledging, by going, did you get it? Because it's this. You do it, like, and a lot of people do that because as a part of anti-humor. But a lot of people do it because there's a lack of faith in their humor. And one thing that we've learned in real time in the last week or so, Triple H isn't the best at humor.
The Lurk Pack, dude. But the highlight of this was obviously X-Pac blowing his line and then stoning it at the same time. Finally, Road Dogg makes it all serious by giving Triple H his final present, which is a front row ticket for Stephanie McMahon to watch Armageddon on pay-per-view.
I mean, she's the daughter of the boss. I think she'd probably just got a comp.
That's my
concern. And she just
killed the bit. No, I thought it was a good way to go from silly to semi-serious.
Yeah,
she probably could have got one.
I'm playing silly buggers, but It'd be like me going...
It's funny though, you find
like
that
me,
out.
Maybe you're going to North and going, I'm going to beat up the top guy. There's a ticket for Andrew Bowers to sit up front. One, there's no up front at North. It's all standing. Until I work there, you clown.
And then also, the match at Armageddon is now no holds barred. Well, Christ, I hope so. Oh. I mean, it would have been even more horrible. It's like, Vince, it's a singles match.
It's a holds barred match. Yeah.
And you don't know any moves. I've been trained by Killer Kowalski. Yay. Like,
we're gonna do the World of Sport round system.
I'm going to win with a chin lock.
I mean, I won't lie. That'd have been quite funny. Yeah. Catch as catch can. Style for 40 minutes.
It's like that Shamrock 7 match where the police were threatening to attack him if they did anything offensive. Oh. So it's this hugging chip for 30 minutes. It's that. It's like, do some of it. Go on. Anyway, backstage, Mick finally meets The Rock. And Rock says he'll slap the taste out of Al's face. So a second after saying this, after saying anything negative about Al Snow, Al Snow jumps into frame and attacks Rock from behind. So he was apparently waiting the entire time just to hear Rock.
I love...
It's ridiculous, and I love this bit.
The whole thing about how... About planes of existence in backstage angles are incredible. How, like, anything outside of the left and right hand of the camera basically is some sort of like existential black hole.
Yeah.
And it was which scene was it? It was in 1994 and it was Highlander 3. It was a chap sat down backstage as Owen Hart, I think, ran and attacked him.
Owen Hart was given a interview on Mania, one of the only things that Mania actually had going for it until they gave up on it about 2 or 3 weeks later. And then Razor Ramon attacked him.
So there we go. So it's that thing where Owen Hart
sat there.
But
you're right. Yeah, you're right, though. Yeah, because, you're in shot right now. This is the only thing that exists. And Razor Ramon, but is it Big Room?
Yeah.
Razor Ramon didn't come through the wall.
And so basically all we can assume is that Razor Ramon basically popped into existence in that brief moment, and then that's okay. And I think that's what's happened with Al Snow here.
That's
popped into existence.
And it's great because he was summoned, like Candyman himself, and by, he had to say his name. He's waiting, hey, how you doing, pal? Cool, been looking everywhere for you. How's life?
Snowman.
The Rock's having a nice time. Rock's having these nice peanut cookies. The Rock likes lugs. What do you think about Al Snow? Al Snow.
There you go.
And that was it. That's the only thing that I didn't appear. And Mankind is right now caught in a bizarre love triangle. The Rock and Al Snow.
That must be difficult to write, since nobody can be assaulted or beat up upon because none of them are women.
Speaking of which, instead of a dozen DX segments this week, we're just getting lots of shots of melancholic Stephanie McMahon. Oh, goody. Mind you, Mick Foley heads the ring, and he is brought to you by WrestleMania 2000, then 64. I think a joke that's been done to death.
Oh, hell yeah.
WF Volume 4, not sure if it's still in the charts, and Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the first one.
Wow, this is where somebody went, hi, Tom Clancy, we love your books, so we're going to make it into a game.
And he goes, okay, will there be option for sequels? And their eyes lit up. Yes.
Anyway. I want to be the kid that walked into a video game shop and went, hi, I don't want to buy Rainbow Six until I've played Rainbow 1 through 5. God.
You could see that coming from an Uber around the freaking corner.
You could see not if it was a backstage promo. Hey,
wait for it. Richard III, but what happened to Richard?
Richard II.
Speaking literally heroes.
How many killings?
Mick Foley starts before we got onto the sore lines and Al Snow's and the Rocks. Foley's done what no man has done. He's beaten the Dalai Lama and other ex-politicians to become number one New York Times bestseller.
Mick Foley. Amazing.
Big support here from the crowd. Like, yay. He says, even the reviews of the country that couldn't read it or wouldn't dare touch something a wrestler wrote. So it must have been thanks to all the fans that watched this show, because they wouldn't give him any positive press whatsoever.
Yeah.
And crowd's like, yeah, get in.
This was great. This was like a real underdog thing with Mick Foley becoming the New York Times bestseller. And as you say, it did get a lot of grief. Like, a lot of people think, oh, who cares about a wrestler story? But it's so beautifully written.
Right.
Like, from Mick Foley's hand. And he's really open about it. Like, I read the book in about 4 days. Like, I plowed through it. and I've read it many times ever since. It's such a great read, and how honest he is, even like to the point where he talks about the ghostwriting process that he started and then went, nah, I can't do it this way. Because everybody, it was autobiographical mania at the moment in the WWF. The Rock had one, China had one, and it was all ghostwritten stuff. And a good ghostwriter can bring a story to life. The great Tony Horn, who was a radio presenter in the Northeast, also works as an excellent ghostwriter. And he's written several books on behalf of other people. And he's really, really strong at it. He's able to bring out that personality. But the guy who wrote these other books for everybody just wrote the same style for everyone. And it just didn't work.
Yeah.
And like Mick Foley in this book picks apart the ghostwriting process that he went through and then went and to the point where he decided he was going to write it himself.
Yeah.
He talks about how he wrote it like on notepads on planes and stuff like that. Really kind of romanticizes the writing process.
I remember really that very vividly, how he describes it. He'd been up all night and going to these different planes and everything. And his wife's like, have you been doing drugs? He's like, no. What have you been doing? Writing.
Yeah.
It's been about ghostwriting and hilarity. I didn't know this. Mike Tyson had a book a while out. And it was obviously ghostwritten some bits. I'm like, okay. Because I'm interested in what Mike Tyson had a very interesting life, to say the least. But there's a bit in it I didn't realize that. And it got quoted in some clickbait websites that, alcoholic though, they hate when I would ever pigeon them in the same hole. That's ridiculous. And how dare you even say it? I'll fight you. But he quoted about a time where he'd seen Rick James go to Charlie Murphy's house and wipe his feet on the settee and all this. And people were like, oh, okay, wait. So he saw the thing that happened in the Chappelle show and someone like typed out what happened in the book. He was like, no, he watched the Chappelle show segment and went, yeah, that happened. And people are like, what?
No.
He literally goes right and goes, yeah. And then this one time, Rick James did this. Everyone's like, you just saw the sketch that everybody's seen.
Oh my God.
And people are like, what? Like you put it about Johnny Murphy would have said, oh yeah, Mike Tyson was there, by the way. One of the most famous athletes in the world happened to be there.
Maybe he's incredibly kayfabe like Arn Anderson is.
Yeah, that was it. Tyson was keeping kayfabe. I don't know why I thought we need to bring up that Tyson moment.
No, but I like that. I love that.
But speaking of autobiographies and ghostwriting, Jericho shows up and gets booze the first time in quite some time because you can hit as many women as you like as we pull on my collar. But how dare you interrupt Mick Foley in his moment of glory? And Jericho gets a blinder here. I mean, he's great.
Isn't it terrible though, where it's like, and again, the fans at this point are something else, where you attack a woman with a hammer. Yay! You interrupt the Big Show mourning his dad. Yay! Mankind's talking about his book. You interrupt him. Boo! Don't insult the mixer.
I'll try and find the line next time. But there was a line. They're on you. Who's Raw on? No, it's not you at TNN.
TNN.
Yeah. When they left and went to USA Network, I believe.
No. It is still on the USA at this point because ECW's on TNN.
God, that's right. Yeah, that'll become an important thing later on. Yeah. So, yeah. When they were going to the next network, so they were going to TNN.
They were going to TNN, yeah.
I believe it was them, or maybe it was with TNN when they went to USA. I forget which one it was. One of them said, who worked for the TV network, said something like great. They were happy. Even though the monster ratings that Raw was getting all this time, they were happy, and they just buried the fan base. Like, the troglodytes, who, you know, these disgusting man children went back to doing whatever they did and left us alone and all this. They were just so happy to go. And I've never really empathized with what he said because I don't think it was very accurate. Until I watched this episode, I'm like,
yeah.
No wonder they were like, you know, we don't care about the ratings. They're making us look bad.
Yeah, it's anyway. So sad.
Anyway, Jericho's blind
to here. Big
shout
to the wrestling fans that have downloaded this podcast for two men to sit and call you troglodytes. You're not a troglodyte.
No, I'm quoting.
You're not a troglodyte. No, I called them all troglodytes.
So my best friends are troglodytes. Jericho gets booze with the line, only reason people bought your book, Mick Foley, was because they thought you died at the end. I mean, that's it.
That's a quality line, isn't it?
Well, take a bow. Jericho talks about when he writes his own book. Ah, that'll never happen.
Ah, he won't write one book.
And you can tell Mick Foley is furious, and they start off fighting immediately. Mick Foley unmasks very quickly. So it's not Mankind, it's Mick Foley, the autobiographer writer. And nearly gets the second rope elbow to the outside. Not seen that in a while. And Jericho just counters it by walking away. Very good counter. Jericho on fire here. He gets the advantage by drop kicking a chair into Mick's face because you can can't hit somebody with a chair, but if you're holding it in front of your face and you kick it in someone's face, that's perfectly okay. Wrestling. Jericho, the commentators talk about Jericho claiming China gave him a concussion after a hammer to the head. That sounds believable, but
he was,
this
well,
is 99 concussion, so it's like, you gave me a bruise.
Yeah.
A comedy concussion. Bump as seen in Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, I think at this point, yeah, that's a great example. I think at this point in the wrestling world, a concussion is that comedy bump in Tom and Jerry with little Tweety Birds flying around your head. Oh, he's had a concussion. Mm. It's like a wacky storyline addendum, yeah, as opposed to it being, right, take the next 3 months yeah off and rest your brain.
Yeah, we've seen the Aaron Hernandez documentary now. It's cool. Jericho attempts to get the walls, but Mick blocks it with the claw. Nice little counter there. But hang on. But Jericho's able to shrug off the claw. And I thought, hang on, I thought if you've got that thing down there that your nerves are able to. And he goes, shut up. And then stuffs Jericho with a package pile driver. Mm. Absolutely flattens him out. He's 5 foot 11 when he started this match. He's, you know, 4 foot three.
Nothing. I'll give you an Excedrin headache number 9.
Hey. And China shows up to hit Jericho with the IC title. Oh, there we go. That's that match over, right? Yeah, whatever. Except Mick Foley accidentally bumps into Miss Kitty. God knows why she was on the apron. And while he's checking on her, because he's a good guy, Jericho no-sells the IC title shot and rolls him up for the win. Okay, fair enough.
Biggest win of Jericho's career?
I'd say so. And it makes sense given Foley's decline, as we said in the previous episodes.
Yeah.
He's pagged.
Yes.
I mean, he's been pagged for quite some time. But yeah, now he's like, no, I'm shoot pagged.
But this was very good. I like seeing Jericho, even though it was a little bit shonky, getting a win over Mankind. Yeah. I think it raises his stock to be amongst it with like the top echelon and as far away from Triple H as possible.
Yeah, and it was funny though seeing Foley and Jericho wrestle, because they pointed out Foley said he'd wrestled Jericho many times, but he never pinned him. So at the Hall of Fame ceremony, Jericho let him pin him.
Oh,
I remember that a few years ago.
That's adorable.
It's like, 1, 2, 3, yay, I got it! Foley beat you. And that's, I like the effort that they put into that, because Mick Foley also had many good matches. This was pretty acceptable for the standards.
It was a pocket full of people who were incredibly giving to roster stars that were coming up.
Yeah.
And Mankind and The Rock were both amongst it. It was really nice to see where you had this guy at the top who was establishing himself as a top guy, but kind of burying people in order to do it. Whereas you had two other guys who are very comfortable in the magnitude of their star power, who are very, very giving. It's a bit like, in my old previous form of life, it's a bit like the one time where I had coffee with the man who drives New York City home, and I once had dinner with the man who woke Ipswich up. The guy who woke Ipswich up was very much, I'm a big star, do you know who I am? The guy who drove New York home was the nicest human being, the most giving, caring, interesting, and interested person I've ever met in radio. One of those where he was a bit of a hero of mine. To get to meet him was amazing, but it was that whole thing of he had nothing to prove, whereas the other chap I was with probably felt like he had something to prove. He had to sort of fluff his chest out a little. And with Triple H, like, he feels like he has something to prove, which is why he'll throw in those digs, Mankind, Chris Jericho, Test. So he needs to. Rock and Mankind don't need to. They don't need to prove their star power. And they will be giving and, as a result, retain their star power, possibly even become bigger stars for it.
Mm. Well said, Tom. But
thank
also,
you.
Self-confidence and... Not self-confidence, self-knowing. That's not right. It's probably a much better term for it than that. Being comfortable in yourself and your abilities.
Being comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah.
Bit of that.
I've blown this one.
Not my words, the words of Matthew Gray.
Photoshop John.
Surveying Rise one night.
Sometimes the words are in your head, and sometimes you have to look up going, where are you? Where have you gone?
Hang on, let me Triple H that gag. Did you get it?
I said, did you bring your scissors? Austin, breaking news. Do we have exclusive news? And I'm surprised you haven't brought this up on the Wrestling Observer. Austin got hit by a car, right?
And Inside Edition did a special.
Right. Inside Edition, like, not only when this was going on, was, you know, roofies and whatever, but also Steve Austin needs neck surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have to exclusively reveal, finally?
Something the Observer's been talking about for weeks. Exclusive reveal. We control the means of communication.
Yeah, WCW insisting that his neck will be healed 2 months. Jerry, that died. That was awful. Sorry. Kurt Angle is here. To no pop, because they're not getting it yet. And what a crowd be doing anything with Kurt Angle on this show. Kurt wants a tag team match. And he's gone out and got the best tag team partner possible. And that is Steve effing Blackman. Knowing what we know now, it's like, yeah, that's fair enough. But back then, it's like, it's just Steve Blackman.
So true.
Crowd doesn't care. Who they do care about, though, is the Headbangers.
Yeah.
Big pop for the, are you still around? Have you been hired all this time? Tag team. I'm smelling 5-star ratings here for this match.
You're right in what you said a second ago about not knowing then what we know now. Like, Angle and Blackman at this time to tag team, like, oh, the boring and the boringer. Yeah. In 2019, if Kurt Angle and Steve Blackman at the top of their ability were a tag team, they'd be unfriggin' stoppable. They'd be DIY. They'd be like unbeatable.
Yeah, plus like probably the hardest tag team in all of wrestling.
They'd
maybe
be intimidated to face. Like Angle and Blackman coming at you would be intimidated. But at this point it was, oh, the dull lads. Yeah. The doldrums.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, but the Headbangers have dresses on.
Yay!
Come on, man!
Apparently somebody tried to sexually assault them backstage.
So Lola is mortified at a prestigious wrestler like Angle having to wrestle these buffoons, and gets a nice line here. It doesn't make too much sense, but their attics are dusty.
I like that.
I think it's one of those quick lines you don't think too much about. It goes, yeah, that's good.
Quite like that.
Anyway, Blackman tags himself in, and this annoys Angle because he's doing a good job and something, whatever. Some weird post-commentary from, I thought it was Michael Cole with a sore throat, but it's definitely Kevin Kelly. There's a lot of post done in here, probably to drown out the horrible crowd they've got.
Yeah.
That's probably the notable bit. Other than the very end bit where the Headbangers, to their funny, and I forgot about this, they try and get whipped towards each other, Mosh and Thrasher, and the corners whipped towards. But instead of like malfunction at the junction and all that, they do the big butt clap.
The butt clap, the mosh, like a mosh pit dance, or as commentary call it, slam dancing.
Yeah, they would come up with words because I've been in many a mosh pit. I've never seen anyone do a flying butt clap. Whee!
You've been to the wrong mosh pits, mate.
Oh, clearly.
Hey, good morning. Come to my mosh pit and slam me, Mum.
My mosh pit's got lugs. But then it gets a bit higgledy-piggledy because I'm not sure if they're expecting that. Like, oh, yeah, they do that. Oh, so the rest of us ignore this. There's some stumbling and fumbling. Blackman kind of knocks one of them into Angle and he gives him the Angle slam and he pins him. And it's like, well, that worked.
There you go.
Because I'm sure that's one of the things they have to do for the training, the athletes and the fox hunter or fox catcher.
It's an Olympic slam.
Something else like that. It's like, yeah, okay, that guy in the dress, he's going to butt clap, and then you're going to... Blackman's going to hit him, and you're going to hit the Angle. Right, okay.
Basically, that was Atlanta 96, mate.
But this is definitely Angle's first feud. I do remember this. And
we are building to Angle versus Blackman.
We certainly are. Oof, a main event in any country.
And again, like, at this time, it's like, oh, the boring lads are fighting. In 2019, both lads, top of their game. Whoa!
Backstage, finally, the mega powers collide. Stephanie and Test hug.
Oh, but it's the worst kind of hug. I had a hug like that from an ex moments before she became an ex. And it was soul destroying. And right, the difference being, difference from my hug and this hug. My hug came from a relationship which had broken down communication-wise, and two people, they still cared about each other, but weren't in love with each other anymore. Right. This is a man refusing to hug his fiance because she got roofied. Let's think on that. And this is Steph, who got roofied and was married against her will, as far as we know. We don't have we're doing this as we see it. Hindsight's 2020. We know where this goes. But at this point in time, it is a woman who, on her bachelorette party, was roofied, knocked out, got married. She has stood in front of the man she was meant to marry, and she is saying sorry. She did nothing wrong. And Test has the opportunity here to really do the right thing. Test is in the same building as the man who did this to his wife to be. He is in the same building, probably 100 yards down the corridor. He doesn't go and see him. He goes to see Steph to make a woman who has been roofied and forced to marry and possibly sexually assaulted, goes into that room to make her feel even worse. Take back everything I said about Test. You are a scumbag. Scumbag. This is, again, this is, right? This is worse than N64 Test.
No, Tom.
This is worse. This guy, had this been me, I'd have been in, like, why is it the father-in-law is the one with a bat ready to fight the man that roofied his daughter? Why is it not Test? If it had been me arriving in that arena, I would not have rested until Triple H's bollocks were hanging above the roof. Like, I'm going to go and see Steph and look stroppy, you bellend, you prick. F*** off.
I love your monologues in this show.
Test, I don't think anyone has talked about Test as much as I have.
Oh.
And I'm counting the WWE booking committee.
Yeah, but you are right, because there are a lot of people, myself included, who the memory is, when they were doing all this back in late 99, why wasn't Test winning the title? Or why wasn't Test wrestling Triple H?
Wasn't it Test versus Triple H?
Yeah, right.
For the right to... What?
For the right to marry.
Why was it not Test and Triple H?
Yeah, and we go with that and we go, why is that? If you just watch the pay-per-views and then you watch the weekly show and go, oh...
Well, that's why. Because he's an absolute bellend.
They booked him to be... like all the other long-haired Canadians on the show, cooked to death.
Because he's an absolute loser.
So Steph and Test hug, and she's like, I was drugged. I still love you. I'm still drugged. That may or may not have happened. But yeah, Test is completely useless and leaves Steph, and the crowd, who again, popped for Test, because they think, okay, Furious Vengeance time, right? And he goes, yeah. Oh, I'm not sure.
I don't know, I feel it. She says, I still love you. Do you still love me? Like, nothing has changed except I got assaulted.
Yeah.
Except, do you still love me? Oh, I don't know. You bellend.
You're just waiting for Flair to show up and go, woo, she's damaged goods, Tess. Woo.
Right.
Oh, I hate you, Flair, for saying all that. And yeah. Flair's just like, no one that time was just like that. I'm going to say all the stuff to annoy you and just get away with it. Because I can say anything innocent and you're still going to get annoyed.
Savage, who is fiery at Flair for saying bad things about the woman he loved. Tess could have made a note, right? The only similarity between Macho Man Randy Savage and Test is the use of the friggin' elbow drop, right? Macho Man, who was the opposite end of the spectrum, who protected his loved one with his goddamn life. And then there is Test, who's, if he's not playing the N64, trying to figure out why he can't get off the snooker table on Micro Machines... He is making a woman who was assaulted feel like shite. What a bellend.
You know why he's mad? Because he just found out Unreal Tournament's never coming out the N64.
Steph, I pre-ordered it.
Steph, mute, keeps on moving. I'm trying to take a photo of a Pokemon Snap.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Jack Charlie comes to the ring, and as I'm going to brought to you by Mech Warrior 3. Only one of those things weighs over 400 pounds. Pat myself on the back, and this match is brought to you with Hardcore Holly and commentary. Yes. Oh. God, yes.
Oh, thank God. Happy days to hear again.
Yes. So, Too Cool come out, and they're now very steadily getting in the way of being very popular, getting cheers and everything. Hardcore Holly says, they're not super heavyweights, they're oversized midgets. And then they're obviously joined by their new pal, the new homie, Rikishi. Hardcore Holly says, he's just a little too small to be a super heavyweight. Not like Crash Holly. So it's Crash versus Rikishi. Crash dies very quickly.
This is a nice showcase of Rikishi.
Yes, absolutely. Annihilates him, and then Too Cool dance, and the pops are nice. And they're made even better, as Hardcore Holly says, as they dance, I can't stand bad people. Very quick segment, but very enjoyable.
Yeah, that was nice. Nice way to get over Rikishi. He's going to be at the pay-per-view in a couple of weeks.
That's right. Mm. Can't wait for that.
Oh, mate, I wait to see his tag team partner.
Funny who he's just showed up after someone got hit by a car, though, isn't it?
Isn't it just, my friend? Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Wonder what that's about. Hmm.
The Rock is here. Yada, 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 rock, rock, rock. Does his usual thing, talking this and that. Crowd loves it. But wouldn't always bring this up, but he would bring it up with guys like Ken Shamrock and Al Snow. And he goes, you're going to come out here, your crappy music is going to play. That's a real insult to come with a man's theme music. Because they're like, I didn't compose it myself. I call on Jim Johnston, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know.
Well, he would bring up the Big Show's theme music. In promos.
Yeah, that's right.
I think he did one where he said, your theme music will play. Well, it's the Big Slow. And the crowd will go, I'm taking a leak. This guy sucks. Didn't he quote Billy Gunn's music as well? He went, I'm an asshole.
Oh, I don't remember that one. The Edge was like, no, it wasn't Billy Gunn. It was X Factor. On one hand, Edge has a title defense now. So that's nice. Negative side, no one's going to watch it because they're going to hear that X Factor theme song and switch off the other channel. Really? Did you pay guys for that? Oh, brutal. Anyway, there's a really, really nice camera shot here that I should have gifted, but I didn't. Go and be asked. Where it just shows like the camera panning and Rock doing that thing where his eyes are shut. And he's like a flower absorbing sunlight. Just, that's it. Give me your strength.
It is just shots like that are a reminder of why this was. Away from some of the horrible stuff we've talked about in this, like this was such a great era. Like The Rock was at almost the height of his power.
Yeah.
Like, and you're seeing this, you're watching, like you say, like the crowd who are just hanging on his every word. And he is stoically absorbing it, like you say. Like photosynthesis is occurring in front of your very eyes. And you watch this and you go, God damn, this isn't even his final form.
Right.
Like this is near the rock bottom, pun intended, of how popular The Rock will become. Mm-hmm. Wow, it's amazing. I'm gonna take my mouth off The Rock's penis so we can continue this podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, there's a cue for him and Tom so much. And here comes Al Snow.
It's Al, yeah, he's good. Al Snow is about to get some star. About to get some stardust off the Rock here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to touch with greatness. Mm. So Rock decides, you know, because he's friends with Al, that friends with Mick, that he will sell one move and one move only. Al Snow,
choose your move.
Yes, and Mick Foley's watching his best friends wrestle on TV, and like a lot of us in that position, are probably hoping they're going to start making out. And Al Snow uses a chair and Rock on the outskirts of the ring. So as the referee is distracted by admiring The Rock, I imagine, this allows Rock to get his breath back from destroying Al Snow. And after recovering and remembering that, I'm The Rock, just destroys him with absolutely no effort shortly afterwards. But you can't spell salt without Al. So he attacks Rock afterwards with his decapitated woman's head.
Al Salt.
I can't spell salt without Al.
Ah, I see.
Salt, S-A-L-T.
With you.
Salt, snow.
Like it.
And salt's good for snow. So that's
nice.
New Age Outlaws show up to play Dance Dance Revolution all over The Rock's prone body. But Mick Foley saves during the break because there's some weird episode in editing. So we get that recapped. And we move on to the main event.
Yeah, so the New Age Outlaws run out at the end after Al Snow's pinned. They attack Rock and then they leg it back. Only to, I presume, hang around in Gorilla for 3 minutes because then they're coming out for the main event.
Again, it's a weird editing episode, but whatever, stuff happens.
There's something about like the way that these shows are paced. Like, I watched Raw this week. I don't normally...
2020 Raw.
Okay. I don't normally watch, you know, behind the curtain, I don't normally watch Raw every week. My normal consumption of Raw is reading results and watching the highlights on the YouTube channel whilst having a poo in the morning. That is how I consume Monday Night Raw normally. The last 2 weeks, I've covered graded. So I've watched Raw. And the pacing of the show is so peculiar because the main event, and we were talking about this in the office earlier, the main event slot is no longer the main event slot. Because the main event slot sort of occurs, as Ross was saying, sort of between hour one and hour two. Mm-hmm. Like that is where you will put your main event match because that's where the audience is at its peak. Mm-hmm. So then hour three is almost kind of a dead zone. Mm. So that's why, like, the old school brain that I have will go, of all these matches that were on Raw last week, like Rollins and Murphy challenging the Viking Raiders for the titles, Rey Mysterio and Andrade for the US title in a ladder match, why is Liv Morgan teaming with Rusev to face Bobby Lashley and Lana the main event? But then the pacing's different. And I've had to sort of learn that recently, that shows are paced different. Whereas this, it's almost like you can see throughout the night, in terms of matches, it builds. Hmm. Low matches at the bottom and the big guys at the top, which is why you get weird pacing like this, where you have The Rock and Al Snow with a New Age Outlaws run in, immediately followed by a main event featuring the New Age Outlaws.
Yeah.
Like, had this been Raw in 2020, you'd have had one of those in the 1 o'clock, in the first hour, one of those in the second hour.
Yeah.
Just an observation.
Yeah, that's very well observed, Paul. But never mind, from 2020 and silly stuff like, you know, Big Show returning to team up with in a six-man tag team. The Big Show teams up with the Hardy Boys to wrestle the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac. And Big Show has his hair long and untamed to hang out with the Hardys. I like that one.
Show Hardy. I wish he'd worn, like, the chinos as well. Not chinos, the big baggy trousers that Hardys wore. I want him to dress like a Hardy. You know, go full jobber. Just start dressing like the Hardy Boys. Fun-loving Big Show. Big Show in the main event. In what is still classed as the main event spot.
Yeah, fighting champ Big Show. Hardys, it's a very nice match.
That was
as crazy as last week's stunt-filled five-minute cage match extravaganza. But it's nice seeing the Hardys are able to outsmart the New Age Outlaws. Now they've got backup in the Big Show, because last time they weren't able to beat them because X-Pac was like, not the equalizer here. Commentators talk about test, not sure what to do with Steph.
You go and fight the man who robbed your wife of her innocence? How about you do that, mate? Like, we should have known when he didn't come after Bulldog. We should have known at that point that Test was gutless. Like, and so I shouldn't be surprised that when in the building where there is the man who spoiled your big day, you're going to go and make the woman feel bad. Piss off, Test.
Anyway, Jeff is able to counter a double backdrop into a double DDT, and it's lovely because instead of the Hardy Boys working the New Age Outlaws match, they're doing more and more Hardy Boys stuff here. New Age Outlaws being very nice here.
Mm.
I had no idea about, like, so your memory is that they were old and not washed up, but the formula was just gone by the time they lost the titles to the Dudleys.
Yeah.
But they were actually still very good in the ring and able to do what they could with their opponents.
Yeah.
If they're little ones like this or big ones like the other ones have wrestled. So it's like, oh, okay, cool. So Jeff Hardy playing Road Dogg for Big Show's gun. That works with the buff in the match. Well done, Matthew. Works and eventually gets the hot tag to Big Show. Big Show destroys everything. Crowd goes wild.
Yeah.
Good. They're booking like Andre in 83.
Simple,
it's fantastic.
Booking, making this monster look monstrous.
He destroys everything. He destroys gun, dog, Xbox, tests, push. Everything in his might destroys.
Tested that on his own.
Yeah. And a beautiful ending. Sees Jeff Hardy miss Air Sabu in the corner. But then Jeff lands on the top turnbuckle. Big Show knocks down Billy Gunn. So Jeff Hardy, still on the turnbuckle, turns round, gets on Big Show's shoulders, and does a swanton bomb off of it.
That's great.
Beautiful. Except X-Pac stops the pin. You're like, okay, that would have been an amazing ending, mate. So then Matt Hardy just rolls him up to win, like, 3 seconds later.
Yeah, I would have gone with the swanton.
Again, X-Pac was having a good time.
Yeah. Do you not think that was the planned ending?
I think because he didn't have any of those green drinks.
Oh.
He had to find some of the...
Something else that was green that he could ingest.
Yeah, kale. That's kale. It.
That was...
The famous
Has
drug.
Xbox been sucking that kale again?
I'm telling you, you could go to rehab for kale.
Never!
Got this image of Xbox walking out, giving it all like the... All the fist-pumping action with a handful of kale. And this match is sponsored by kale. Eat rich.
Boo. Oh, sorry. I mean extreme kale.
Yay! RC kale. It's the Coca Kale franchises.
Kale spelled with an X and a Z. And then Bossman making his only appearance on the show. Boo. Attacks Big Show.
Well, boo, it's his only appearance.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, give us more of the number one contender.
Yeah, it's a very serious show. So only one Big Bossman attack. Then The Rock shows up to attack DX. And then everyone else comes out. It's breaking loose. By God, Austin's not here. By God, look at the carnage. Austin's not here. By God, Austin is really not here. Guys, please go home.
The second schmoz to end SmackDown for the second week in a row.
I think they got carried away with how good last week's was.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, though, the crowd is like, yay, everybody's brawling, yay. But, I mean, last week is like a Hall of Fame moment.
I assume we get from this some kind of dark match multi-man tag main. It felt
nothing
like...
came up when I looked at the results, so.
Oh, fair enough.
Maybe it's had a big brawl and then.
Yeah, a big brawl.
The Rock came
win.
Out and went, Pie Pie Pal.
Pie Pie Pal. Yes!
Baby Pie.
Pie Pie Pal. Pie Pie Pal.
Pie Pie. I was trying to go, Pie Pie Al Snow sucks. Pie Lillian, if you smell pie. But I said, Pie Pie
Tony,
Pal.
Tony, get in here and taste the strudel.
Yeah. Give him the stone cold pie. Oh, whatever. Screw this train of thought. It's going nowhere.
Give Tony Schiavone a
stunner. Tess got in the ring and all the rest just went, boo.
No, Tess wouldn't get in the ring because it would involve him having to come face to face with people that are bigger than him. Tess is around the back somewhere, like making a woman working in the canteen feel bad because his soup's too hot. Bore off, Tess. We don't like you anymore.
Yeah, Tess. Go suck and knock out all the jiggies in Rusty Bucket Bay.
Go to WCW and they'll call you the demonstration.
Demo. All right, look, we're getting
What's practice run doing in Atlanta?
Practice run. You can team up with the Natural Born Thrillers and be like, here's above average Mike Sanders and just average Andrew Martin. Anyway, we are talking complete bollocks as usual, and
yeah.
You're going to have to hack up this lovely podcast, which did nothing wrong until we showed up.
Right.
So, Tom, what do you remember from this week's episode?
I remember the volatile reaction that Stephanie McMahon had. A woman that had, in storyline world, been roofied and sexually assaulted. The volatile reaction that wrestling fans gave her was disgusting. That's what I remember. What about you?
I don't remember that because I don't remember watching this episode. But if I had done, I would definitely remember that. I remember the wedding.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
That wedding is amazing.
Yeah. I don't remember anything else about this episode, but I definitely remember the wedding recap and the eventual rise to whatever.
What did you forget? What would you like to forget? Tell you what I forgot in this one. I forgot the Big Show team with the Hardys. I forgot all about that match. And I forgot the swanton off Big Show's shoulders.
Yeah, the brief fighting champ Big Show thing.
Yeah.
Cause it's good to keep him away from all the other dumb stuff that's happening.
Yeah, yeah. I think everybody seems to be being kept at arm's reach from other people. It's almost like the rest of the equivalent of that puzzle where you've got a fox, a bird, and a chicken, and a bag of corn.
Yeah, yeah, something.
And you have to get them across the river.
Yeah.
So it's like you've got Triple H, The Rock, and The Big Show. They're not allowed to touch. Mm. So I said Triple H across first with Vince McMahon. And send the boat back. We'll send The Rock across with the New Age Outlaws.
Yep.
Bring them back. will send Big Show across with who's left.
I'm all drowned, Test.
Test doesn't get a boat. Test can sit there. I'm really angry with Test this week.
And I can tell.
I should be more angry with Triple H, but I'm more angry with the gutlessness of Test.
Yeah, it's a wrestling show where manly men do stuff. And nowadays, though, it's weird seeing this. But we're seeing this in 99, but nowadays you see a lot of it where it's like, a lot of it on SmackDown as well, where like, especially with people like Shorty G, Sheamus comes in and goes, oh, short stuff, you suck and are terrible. And you're like, instead of him being like, them's fighting words, I'm going to beat the hell out of you. He's like, well, that's your opinion. And then they'll zoom in on his sad face after the other guy's, he'll be like, ah. And it's like the soap opera cam where it's like, now act. And then they wait a few seconds as they fade out and you go, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Beat him up, you idiot.
Come at him.
Yeah.
Throw yourself. Spike Dudley would never take that.
Exactly. And he was 3'2". Anyway, stuff I've forgotten about. Jericho dragging a good match out of Mick Foley.
Yeah, which had fun.
He probably did it like almost deliberately, like, please let me get a good match with you. I need people backstage to stand up for me. Yeah. If Jericho had a bad match here or angered Mick Foley, that's it.
Yeah.
Back to WCW with you. Because that's it. We'd have lost all political favor.
Yeah.
The Rock had fallen out with him. But they get better. Triple H, well, you know. Test, he's just ignored backstage.
Mm.
He hoped from behind, people mistake him for him. And then, so he really needed Mick.
Yeah.
And thank God he got it. And he probably said, yeah, your book's really good as well. Oh, thanks, Jericho.
Nah,
I'll put a good word for
Jericho,
you.
Jericho
immediately throws in the bin afterwards. Just like,
Jericho had learned that he had to start making some allies, mm-hmm. I think. So I'm glad he did, because he stuck around. Which is what we like to see.
He did. I wonder what happened to Jericho.
Oh, yeah.
And 20 years later, when we're doing this podcast, we're
like,
that
little wrestler?
That's when Jericho came back.
What happened to Le Champion? And it's on that note, we thank you for sticking around for the entire time. Until next time, he is at Matthew Gregg. What have you got coming up this week, Matt?
I'm going to do a film in Sheffield.
Yes, you are.
With Troma. And when I say I'm doing it, I'm going to be an extra. But they have said, oh, yeah, don't worry. You can die on screen. I went, yeah. We could put a squib on you. I'm like, get in.
Oh, my God.
A squib is a little bag of blood that goes, and I go, ugh. I'll sell it.
When's the film out?
Do a flare flop. No idea.
Oh, so look.
I will hype the hell out of it. When I know, you'll know. Don't worry. I'll be going about it. I'll go on about it like Jericho beating Austin and Rock in one night. You know.
Oh, look out for Matthew Gregg in a Troma movie very, very soon.
That's right, and it's called Matthew Gregg. That's the name of the film.
Toxic Fan Crusader.
Oh, I'll be on imdb.com. I just realised. Oh, anyway. Matthew talking about himself, blah, blah, blah. Tom, what have you got lined up for
this? This week, as you're hearing this, this is the week before my birthday. My birthday's on Friday, as you're hearing this.
Oh, cool.
As you're hearing this.
Yes.
That's what we're recording.
Yeah, you confused me. All right.
Yeah. My birthday is on Friday. North Wrestling is on Saturday. If you're in the Newcastle upon Tyne area, come see us, because it's the first North show of the year.
Yeah.
It features Eddie Kingston versus Rory Coyle, which basically is an event that will make you throth at the gash.
They're a bad influence on you, Tom.
And it is the 1st of February, a.k.a. the end of dry January.
Oh, have you been doing that?
Hell yeah.
Congrats.
Getting battered on the course.
Good to hear. And we'll be there alongside you, along Curtis Chapman. Gia Adams.
Yes, indeed.
Gio Knox on all the other good ones, but I'm very happy to see Curtis Chapman.
Mad Kurt is coming to Mad North Kurt. Wrestling. That's exciting, mate. That's exciting.
Damn it. Why have we got Eddie Kingston versus Rory Coyle? Why not Kingston versus Curtis Chapman? God damn it.
That's another trick from the time. He is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Love you, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.